entire audience. There are tens of them out there. A happy Thanksgiving.
And happy Thanksgiving to you, Robert.
Now, our American audience has no idea what we're talking about, and the international audience probably doesn't care, but it is Thanksgiving Day.
Isn't it Columbus Day in the United States?
It is Columbus Day.
Okay.
It's Thanksgiving here in Canada, so enjoy your turkey if that's what you're having, and your time with your family, which we have had perilously little of over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Which is most important. But we are prepared to drop the puck on another hockey season. Shannon is all excited. And we will commence by bringing in two of our pals, our chums, our buddies, who know a thing or two about this game, and we will test them on their knowledge. We'll see exactly how smart they are. Scott Burnside and Mike Harrington, when we come back after these messages. And so we are set to kick off another hockey season, actually at about the right time of the year, which hasn't happened for a couple of seasons.
Yeah.
Scott Burnside of dailyfaceoff.com, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, joining us to chat a little bit about the upcoming season. Well, I learned less than all three of you guys by a significant margin when it comes to hockey. However, it seems to me that there is a great reluctance on the part of anybody to pick any team other than Tampa Bay to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, you can make a list of the teams that you think can compete, and Colorado seems to be on everybody's list, but I attribute that to the stupidity in general of hockey people who for about 10 years predicted San Jose would win a cup and they never did. So they're on the Colorado bandwagon, and they're going to stay on it, I guess, until finally there's no chance whatsoever. But is there another team? Is there somebody other than Tampa Bay that has a real legitimate shot at this? Like, even, I mean, maybe as good as a co-favorite? Scotty, to you first.
Well, yeah. I mean, I pick Colorado.
There you go. Perfect.
But, yeah. Well, proving your point definitively.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But, you talk about people who used to pick San Jose year after year. I used to pick Washington every single year because I was like, well, at some point, that team is good enough and they will win a Stanley Cup. So I now I've shifted gears, and now I didn't pick them to win, but I picked Carolina to go to the final. And that was after I picked them to win the cup last year. And even though they, the departure of Dougie Hamilton and the departure of Nedeljkovic, who's in Detroit, and Peter Mrazek, who of course now carrying all the Leaf Stanley Cup hopes, or some of them anyway, I think the Canes are better than they were a year ago. I just love the way Rod Brind'Amour coaches. That team is so deep. So I picked the Canes to go to the final. But I will say the team that I am most fascinated about is the Florida Panthers, and coming off Alexander Barkov's whopper contract extension. But that team, man, they're built for the playoffs. And I thought the Tampa-Florida first-round series last spring might have been the most compelling of all the series, especially the first part of it. Just wall-to-wall emotion, off the charts, Battle of Alberta kind of stuff. And I think the Panthers, if they can figure out the Spencer Knight, Sergei Bobrovsky thing, they're going to give Tampa all they can handle. In fact, if I have to check my memory, I think I have Carolina, Florida in the East final. So
you don't even have Tampa getting to the third round?
No, see, I didn't like them to go back to back. I sure don't like them to win three in a row.
Harrington, jump in. I'm assuming there are 31 candidates above Buffalo who have some remote shot, but the Sabres, of course, have none.
There's no selection of Buffalo anywhere in North America. No. Right. Here's the thing. I'm guilty of the Colorado thing also. Okay.
There you go. See,
I'm guilty. I did it a lot. Not so much with San Jose. I did it a lot with Washington. I kind of almost wanted to get on the Vegas bandwagon of every year, one year they break through. I do think Colorado or Vegas, one of these years, maybe this year, is going to break through. I don't think Tampa wins three in a row. It's just hard to do. No one's done it since the Islanders, even though they've been two shorter seasons, but there was a lot of mental taxing for Tampa to get through these 2 years. I love, like Scotty said, I love Florida, but here's the problem I see with both Florida and the Leafs. In general, you don't go from never winning a series to suddenly winning the cup. The 2012 LA Kings did that. Basically, no one ever does. Florida hasn't even won a playoff series since 1996. The Leafs haven't won one since 2004. They're not, I don't think, suddenly going to win the cup. They might get there. They might get to the conference final. But I really think, to me, this has to be the year. If not Tampa, let's throw that out for a second. If not Tampa, it's Colorado or Vegas are the best choices for someone else to win a cup.
Shannon looked like he was shaking his head a little bit. You're not buying that?
No, I'm not. I'm firmly on the Tampa bandwagon still. When you think about the bodies they have at every position, and we touched on this last week, Bob, best goalie, best defenseman, how many of the best forwards? Tampa has them. Tampa is, I think Tampa is far and away the best team in the game. And the only thing I would say that might complement something Scotty said is the toughest battle for Tampa will be out of its own division. And I do think it's going to be the Panthers. And by the way, you talked about the Battle of Alberta rivalry, the playoff series. The preseason game this year that they played was as good a rivalry as we've seen. And you know darn well that Joel Quenneville is going to figure out that if they're going to beat the Lightning, they're going to have to be more physical than the Lightning. And that's something we saw already this year. So to me, it's Tampa. And if I had to pick a second team, I'd pick the Panthers.
So correct me if I'm wrong, any one of you, and I know you will, with great relish. But are we all in agreement that if you win three in a row now you can start talking about dynasties?
Oh, yeah.
Is that sort of the number? Is that where the bar is, three?
No, the way things are now in the NHL, to me, two in a row is an unbelievable accomplishment. I mean, Pittsburgh was the first time anybody had done it since Detroit. Now Tampa's won two in a row. It's an unbelievable accomplishment now in a 32-team league with everything that goes on to win even two in a row. I just think that's going to be very rare. We've only seen it twice in the last 20 years. If Tampa wins three in a row, it's one of the all-time great teams right now.
Is it mitigated in any way by the abbreviated season last year and the – you know, all the COVID crap that we went through?
I don't think so. Simply because the one thing that hasn't been ever abbreviated, Bob, is the playoffs. The playoffs have never been abbreviated. I mean, we, and the players, give the players credit for this. You know, when everybody went into that darn bubble in Toronto and Edmonton, it was the players that said, no, we don't want best of five series. We want best of seven series because we want to make sure that you win 16 games to win the Stanley Cup. That's a marker that people will not take away from us. And I think that's important. Don't you, Scott?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think winning the last two cups might have been, you can argue that they were as difficult a championship to win as certainly in recent history since I've been doing it a long time. I'm curious though about Bob's question, and it comes up, and I referred to it myself. You know, if Tampa wins three in a row, where are they in the pantheon of the, you know, considered the greatest teams of all time? And whether you have to affix the label dynasty to them or not, I would argue if they do win three in a row, then this organization, you throw in the trip to the Stanley Cup final in 15, two trips to the East final in 17 and 18. This might be, even if they just get to a final, I mean, where do we consider this Tampa team is one of the greatest teams of all time? And I think they've got a foot in the door. I'll ask it. It's not my podcast, but I'll ask it anyway. I think for a long time, we've considered Chicago
three, 6 years,
trip to a West final against the Kings in between as the greatest team. I mean, Pittsburgh's in there too, obviously going back to back and winning cup in 09. Is Tampa the greatest team since the 2004-05 lockout? I think it's hard to argue against it right now.
And don't forget, they had a 62-win season that ended in the first round when they suddenly got swept by Columbus. That's another season that could have gone deep in the playoffs. That'll become really, again, one of the greatest. How did that ever happen in NHL history? And that's another season you throw into this whole run that Tampa's had.
And if memory serves me, after their Stanley Cup final in 2015 against the Blackhawks, the next year they missed the playoffs.
Correct.
You know, if they win three in a row, I agree with you. But I'll tell you what, the roller coaster they've been riding, really, if you're a Tampa guy, and or a Tampa fan, and you go back to 2014 when you see all these young guys and you see Hedman starting to mature and you see Stamkos in his prime before he gets multiple injuries. But there's those two really bad blips, that 2016 team that didn't make the playoffs and then the sweep by Columbus. But if they get to three Stanley Cups, they have to be in, they have to be called dynastic. And I would actually put them on the same level, Scott, as the Blackhawks. That's where I would put them. I would put equal to what the Blackhawks did for that 6-year period.
Yeah, it's interesting you guys keep bringing up the Blackhawks, because I have a hard time putting them in that category. I have great respect for them, and 3-6 is a great achievement. But if you go back historically in time, you're looking at the Montreal Canadiens, the Edmonton Oilers, and the New York Islanders as the three dynasties, real dynasties in the game. And they all did a lot better than win 3 out of 6. And yet, I'm wondering whether a team like, not even the same sport, the New England Patriots, with what they accomplished with Brady at quarterback over a, 8-10 year period, they never won 3 in a row, but they won consistently. They won a bunch.
Oilers never won 3 in a row either, Bob.
Good point. So
Islanders did, Canadians did.
Yeah. Are those the only two since the 50s?
I think you're right. Cause Boston was supposed to be a dynasty and then screwed it up with that year that they had too much fun between 70 and 72. And then the Flyers won 2 in a row and then Montreal won the 4. So yeah, Montreal and the Islanders have the only ones that won 4 consecutive Stanley Cups in our lifetime. You know, when you think about it.
But my point is, maybe now, I mean, you cannot argue that the New England Patriots have been and are considered a dynasty by the general population, but they never won 3 in a row. Maybe the bar is slightly different. Maybe that's why you can include the Chicago Blackhawks in this.
But I think, and I'm sorry to kind of dominate this, but I think that the whole issue becomes the financial aspect of what professional sports has created. We're talking about a dynasty in a cap era.
Yeah.
I think that's the key. Guys, just jump in. I mean, I think that's when you know you have cost controls, and every year that you're going to have, and Stan Bowman went through this, every year he's got to trim somebody off the roster 2 days after they had the parade because he knows he can't afford them anymore, and he's got to up a contract or two. And that becomes as big a challenge as anything.
You're completely reinventing your team all the time in this era. I mean, Chicago, like you said, in 2010, Chicago had to lop guys off right away. And that's something that to me is interesting, how these teams are able to do it. Pittsburgh has been able to survive. Tampa's been able to survive. And these teams do reinvent themselves. It's not like the Islanders of the 80s or the Canadiens of the 70s. Those basically were the same teams throughout that entire dynasty with only minor changes. And these teams go through big changes now.
Well, and to me, what has been fascinating about Tampa is that they've gone through a transition at the top with, you know, Steve Yzerman building the foundation there. And listen, this, it all comes such a cliche now, but the drafting and developing and how the Tampa consistently identified high skill, they may not have been prototypical, they may not have been necessarily high draft picks, but they had high skill, very smart players, played with a ton of speed, and that's what has Tampa always played with, ton of speed. And then they filled in around the edges, right? I mean, you add a Barkley Goodrow or you add a Blake Coleman to add the grit. I mean, Zach Bogosian comes off the scrap heap in Buffalo and I thought played exceptionally well 2 years ago for the Bolts, playing with Victor Hedman a lot of that playoff run. But the core of that team is homegrown, and it's not all, see, Pittsburgh is completely different, right? I mean, they had all those high picks, Fleury, Jordan Staal, Malkin, Crosby, and then consistently traded every single draft pick to keep loading up every single year. And sometimes it worked. And of course, go back to back in 16 and 17, you know, the Ron Hextall and Brian Burke have their work cut out for them because the Penguins did it completely different. Tampa continues to bring players all the time. And that's, to me, what is fascinating about what they've accomplished there.
Can I just bring up two names? Can I bring up two names in Tampa that don't get enough credit? First of all, the owner, Jeff Vinnick, smart guy, but he lets his hockey experts be hockey experts. You know, he's not walking in and saying, who you draft, and I want to draft this guy because he was nice to my son at the video game board.
Wow.
He's not doing that. I think that's a big part. And the other guy's a guy named Al Murray, who has been around the game for years, you know, Hockey Canada. And when you have a team as profitable on the ice as Tampa is, you're not in the top five in the lottery anymore. You've got to find ways to get guys in the 20s and in the 30s to contribute to your team. And Al Murray's done a marvelous job through Yzerman, now with Brisebois, for this team.
Organizationally, the thing I always love about Tampa is look how they win in the minor leagues. That team 10 years ago in Norfolk with that incredible winning streak. Who was the coach? John Cooper. A lot of the players there. Look how they've won in Syracuse. They win in the minor leagues. They bring guys up. And even in 2015, what happened during that Stanley Cup final? Scotty, you were there. You remember Ben Bishop got hurt. Who was suddenly thrust into goal? This kid nobody had really heard of and didn't know how he was going to react. It was Andre Vasilevsky. I mean, they keep bringing up guys through their system all the time.
Well, I mean, and let's remember, who was their best line? The guys that were so good in Norfolk, Palat, Johnson, and Kucherov. Right. not bad for your American League team to come and be your number one line in the National Hockey League.
Yeah. Well, I want to circle back and mention something about Vinnick, because I think we all recall this. When he took over the team, he was perceived, I think, probably by all four of us and most of the rest of the media as, okay, here comes another idiot who thinks he can own an NHL team. And correct me if I'm wrong, put his kid on the ice in practice with the guys and did all the things you're not supposed to do as an owner.
I don't remember. Honestly, I don't remember that, Bob.
Yeah, I don't remember that either. But, well, and was, I mean, to me, like, I don't remember having, and I mean, you have to remember what Tampa was like from ownership on down when Vinnick took over, and it was a
you can say it. You can say it.
Yeah, it was a shit show there.
It was a shit show. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, and Vinnick, I don't remember the kid on the ice, but what I do remember is, and John mentioned it before, is that consistently, well, he hired Steve Yzerman, who had, you know, had cut his teeth working with Kenny Holland. And I think Jim Noah was still in Detroit at, you know, at least for part of the time after Steve Yzerman retired, but gave him a chance but let him do his job. Like, you know, I mean, it's like shooting fish in a barrel, but Mike's sitting there with a hockey team that I don't know whether it's the complete antithesis, but it's certainly not at the same
end up there.
Either you do it right or you do it wrong, and Buffalo has done it wrong and Tampa did it right.
Correct.
And when you do it right once, it's easier to repeat that. And when you do it wrong, it's hell to try and get yourself out of that mess.
And it's easy to repeat doing it wrong.
Easy to repeat doing it wrong. Well, exactly. And we should also remember it was not all that long ago, and I don't want to put a clock on it because I can't remember, but we were consistently talking about the failure of the Tampa Bay franchise and its imminent departure from Tampa. Because they couldn't draw. I mean, it was badly put together at the very beginning. And there clearly seemed to be a dearth of hockey fans in the Tampa area. And they certainly didn't support the team. And they were in some economic peril.
Yeah.
And now it might be as good a market for hockey as there is
in North
America.
It is so fun to go there. When there are people in the building, I mean, the fact that the weather's always nice and you can go outside and be in the plaza or walk over to the river and have a beer before the game, it's paradise when it comes to a hockey game.
But we should also point out, remember the Tampa Bay Buccaneers drew flies. They were crummy.
Yeah.
But they didn't draw. And to this very day, the Tampa Bay Rays baseball team, whose success almost parallels the hockey team, in terms of performance on the playing surface, they're about to lose that franchise.
Yeah.
So Tampa does not, clearly, their sports fans do not suffer fools lightly, but they have gravitated to this hockey team. And as John said, it's a great place to go and watch a game.
Well, I just want to say part of that's, you know, is we talk about ownership and we focus only on, well, did they pay Steven Stamkos? Yes. Or Hedman or whatever it is, where they let their people do the jobs, which lots of owners don't do. But they also, and when you win a cup in 2004, they get stung, right? They lose the post-cup season because of the lockout. So, you know, that sucked for them. But what Jeff Vinnick has done in that geographic area, like if you go down to watch a game in Tampa now, that it's a completely different place than 10 years ago.
Absolutely.
People want to go there, not just the players and the coaches, but the fans. Who doesn't want to go down there? And that's, again, a commitment from the owners. Now he's making money, so good for him. But, you know, it is a whole package. And Tampa as the city is really fortunate to have what they have. And certainly the hockey team is fortunate.
Well, there were lots of reasons why Steven Stamkos rejected the Toronto Maple Leafs offer and decided to stay in Tampa. Money was not one of them. And certainly his personal life had a great deal to do with it, without question. But I think he recognized that, you know, being in Tampa is a pretty good deal. Mm-hmm. The weather's nice. The fans are great. The joint is full. And he was surrounded by a good hockey team. And he chose not to come back home, essentially. And I think he knew what was going on. John, you wanted to say something?
No, it just does tweak me too. I mean, we hinted at it before about Tampa being so hands off and the Sabres being so hands on, and you know the two biggest stories off the ice in the National Hockey League before we start are, when's Brady Tkachuk going to sign, and what's going to happen with Jack Eichel? So, since Mike Harrington doesn't work in Ottawa, I'm going to ask him about Jack Eichel.
Oh, Jack Eichel. You know, it's hard to believe it got to this point. I do think, and I wrote a column, it's on BuffaloNews.com in the last couple of days. There's no question that Pat Brisson is getting things moving a little bit here. And at least he got Jack some other opinions, some other MRIs, that he can get some medical records to teams. He's trying to help broker a deal. And ultimately, he's trying to find a team that will allow Jack to have his artificial disc replacement surgery. And then he can go to Kevin Adams and say, Team X is willing to do this. Talk to Team X about a deal. Ultimately, I think this thing is really being pushed by the Olympics. Jack still wants to play in the Olympics. He's going to need surgery soon. A, if he wants to make the Olympics. And B, he just needs surgery anyway because of all the reports that the kid's got a nerve issue with the disc pushing on the nerve. You need to have that repaired. I just can't sit there. So I do think this thing has sped up. They're not going to trade Eichel today, tomorrow, or next week, but I don't think this is going into next offseason. I don't even think this is going into the trade deadline. I think this is going to go at some point, perhaps even in this calendar year. And then it's just a question of, what deal do you make if you're the Sabres? What do you get back? And how do you move forward from this whole sordid situation?
Well, but do you think that the Buffalo, I don't know what they expect. I mean, obviously they expect more than they're going to get. But what would you be willing to offer for Jack Eichel, all things considered?
Well, you need to make sure Jack Eichel's healthy. That's one of the
problems. Well, but he isn't going to be healthy until you make the decision to go get him.
Well, maybe. But if at that point he's had the surgery, you know pretty much the likelihood is that he's going to recover from whatever surgery he has to play good enough to be in this league again. He's only going to be 25 years old. But you're right. The Sabres are going to have to take a step back. The one step back they're going to have to take is there's probably going to be conditions on the deal.
Sure.
Number of games Jack played, it may impact draft picks you get. And that's something that I don't think they were starting with. And now the Sabres are probably going to have to be willing to go to. But yeah, Bob, there's no way. There's no chance the Buffalo Sabres could ever win this deal. This isn't a no-win deal. Try to get the best out of it.
Here's the other thing for me. And Mike, you mentioned the Olympics. So let's say, for the sake of argument, I'm the general manager of the New York Rangers, and I make the trade for Jack Eichel, and I give one of my first-round picks that from the last couple of years, a conditional first-round pick next year, maybe 1-2 years from now, that based on how many games Eichel plays. And Eichel has the surgery. Am I going to want him to go to Beijing and play in for 17 days in the Olympics rather than rest and get ready to play for the New York Rangers in a Stanley Cup run? I'm not sure about that either.
It's a problem, man, and that's something that's going to have to be negotiated, because I agree with you, John. I think some teams are going to say, well, yeah, we're interested. We want him. And they're going to want to say to Pat Brisson, wait a second. We want him, but we don't want him going to the Olympics now. We want him doing some more R&R for those 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I think that's a real dilemma here. I think that depends on what team makes the trade. If it's a playoff team, they're going to say exactly what you said. I mean, one team I've certainly pointed at for a while here is Anaheim. Maybe Anaheim isn't as concerned about that, since they're probably not a playoff team this year. But it's another element. That's the thing about this entire situation, is there has been so many little tentacles of it all, so many little spokes going here and there, and the Olympic thing is another one.
Have you heard, Mike, that the family has said, if you trade him, he can't be traded to the East? Have you heard that story?
That the family has said that? No,
Pagulis. I've not heard that story. Okay.
I've heard that the ownership of the Sabres would prefer to send him to the
West. No, that's what I'm saying. That when I say the family, I'm talking the Pagulis.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant Jack's family.
Oh, no. There's only one family in Buffalo.
So. Yeah. It's well known that the preference here is to trade Jack Eichel to the Western Conference. Now, I mean, I get what they're thinking. You only play the teams in your division four times anyway. You play the team in the other division three times. And if you're worried about playoff series, the Buffalo Sabres got some time to worry about seeing Jack Eichel in a playoff series. But yes, we've heard routinely since this whole thing, the goal is to trade him to the Western Conference to see him as little as possible.
We have mentioned, or the guys have mentioned, four teams at least that may be capable of contending for the Stanley Cup. We'll talk about them in a little more specificity when we come back after these messages. McCallum and Shannon with you on the podcast. Scott Burnside, Mike Harrington with us. All right. We've talked about, mentioned Carolina and Florida as potential contenders in the East, Vegas and Colorado as potential contenders in the West. Did any of them do more than the others to make themselves better during this offseason? Burnside, to you first.
Yeah. I'm not all in on Vegas.
All right. Well, I mean,
yeah, I'm not.
I am, and Harrington seems to be. So, but
I'd like to go to Vegas. I want to go there for All-Star. I'm all in for that. Is this Vegas team better than the team that lost to Montreal? I don't know if they are. Maybe they are. Cosmetic.
Well, but they got to the series against Montreal, which is more than Colorado did, because they beat Colorado again.
Yes, right.
But you guys all still love Colorado.
Yes. Well, I like Colorado because, and John mentioned it, and I think it's a valid point, there historically is getting punched in the mouth a couple of times before you actually get it done. Kings were, they're the outliers in that, winning in 12 and 14. But I think Colorado is that team. I think Nathan MacKinnon is that kind of player and that kind of leader. And I got to tell you, I'm not throwing Philip Grubauer under the bus. And I think he makes Seattle a really interesting team in a very weak Pacific. But I think if Darcy Kuemper stays healthy, the Avs are better in goal than they were a year ago. Now,
you do, huh?
Their depth still stinks. Yeah. And Pavel Francouz is out again. I don't like their goaltending depth. And you have to have that to get yourself in position. Again, Vasilevsky plays every night. Doesn't seem to matter to him. So maybe Kuemper will do the same thing. But I like Colorado. I like the where they're built. I think Jared Bednar probably learned some things. And I got to tell you, the team that I really like, and the Central is going to be a dogfight, because there are a lot of teams that I think you can make a case for.
Can I guess?
I love the Winnipeg Jets. I love what Kevin Cheveldayoff has done there. Connor Hellebuck is a top flight goaltender. That defense, in a very short period of time, has become, I think, very solid and deep. And if Mark Scheifele can get over being the baby that he was in that series against Montreal, then maybe he learns from that experience where he single-handedly cost the Jets a chance in that series. I just think that's a team with a chip on its shoulder. And I think that they have the chance to push Colorado in the Central. And I really like what they've done there.
Can I just say something here? I mean, and I know we're talking about contenders. Buffalo's opening this week against Montreal. Montreal had to be the luckiest team I've ever seen make a Stanley Cup final. Good Lord. Toronto just choked. Just choked against them. Winnipeg, the Shifley thing, unbelievable. I still don't know how they beat Vegas in a best of seven series. You know, I know Carey Price had a heater, but come on. Good Lord. It was unbelievable to me that Montreal got to game six of the Cup final. That was just not a very good team. I'm sorry. It wasn't.
Don't apologize. You're right.
You know? You're 100% right. And I there are plenty of people who don't think they'll make the playoffs this year.
Absolutely not. Look at the division. Which of those four teams in the Atlantic Division is Montreal beating? Tampa, Florida, Boston, Toronto. Which one of those four they're finishing ahead of? They're not finishing ahead of any of them.
Yeah, and you can't. The only way is if they send five from the Atlantic, but that means you're only sending three from the Metro, and the Metro. There's a lot of transition there, but your point's an excellent one. I'm not sure Montreal can be better than the fourth place team in the Metro.
Yeah. Here's the other thing too, is it's hard this year because almost every team, even the good teams, have flawed goaltending. Yeah. Winnipeg does not with Hellebuck, which is why they stand out. I'm not big on them, but he's great. Tampa obviously does not have flawed goaltending. Every other team you're wondering, Vegas, Leonard. Okay. I like Leonard, but is he the guy? I mean, Colorado, Darcy Kemper. Okay. Maybe. Is he the guy? I don't know. Carolina? You know, I don't know. Freddie Anderson.
Right. Anti-Ranta.
Right. I mean,
Freddie Anderson will be great during the regular season, and then he'll fall on his face.
Anti-Ranta and Freddie Anderson. What's the over-under that they finish the season healthy? Come on.
Well, there's that too.
Not high. I mean,
even if they get to the playoffs,
you're going to be confident with Anderson in goal? I would take the Ranta-Anderson pair any single day over Jack Campbell and Peter Mrazek.
But that's not a high standard.
Well, but it is. I mean, we're talking about two teams that have a legitimate shot at winning a cup, I think. Certainly, I hear lots of people, you know, is this the Leafs year?
No.
I got to tell you,
their
goaltending is, anyway, that's how I would view it.
You said earlier you wanted to go to Vegas. You better stay out of Vegas with an attitude like that.
Scott, I got to tell you, and Mike would hear this as well. I think the trepidation in Southern Ontario about the Leafs falling flat on their face again is massive right now.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I mean, it is crazy how people are saying, well, you know, we're going to screw it up again. We got no chance.
They're a regular season team. They're going to score a lot of goals. They'll win a lot of games. Then they get to the playoffs. And are you going to get enough saves? Are they going to be able to play the harder game that's required in the playoffs? Are they going to be healthy? All those questions. But it's just, they're a regular season team. The Leafs are going to probably be in a 100-point team again. But then how deep are they going to go in that division in the playoffs?
But that isn't this a great thing? We've talked about being, you know, teams that have to, you know, you have to, the cliche, you have to face adversity or you have to fall before you can walk, all those things. Well, aren't the Leafs aren't they that team now?
Like, yeah, but they failed twice too many. But they should have gotten over this hump 2 years ago. Well, and they're still not over it.
Okay, so then is the question, is it not when they get over the hump, but so what do you do now that you accept that they'll never get over the hump? I'm not there yet, but I think this is such a critical year because it won't matter if they have, as Mike points out, if they're a 105-point team, it won't matter because no one, it's all the good teams. You know, we saw Tampa last year finish third in the Central Division. I don't think they sweated it too much, right? Of course not, because they knew.
Hold on. There's a caveat there, though. When number 86 can just automatically show up the first week of the playoffs, that I you're right about Tampa in the regular season, but when you can have a guy like Kucherov just show up and be in game shape, and he did win the Conn Smythe, didn't he? Did he win the Conn Smythe? No, he didn't. Vasilevskiy did. Anyway, so but he could have won the Conn Smythe trophy.
Yeah,
he could. I mean, that's a little different animal.
But aren't Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner being paid to be Nikita Kucherov? I mean, isn't that the whole point of that salary structure?
Well, it's exactly the point. And the issue, as John has alluded to, we can both tell you this, Leaf fans have no confidence in this team. And the question before the season starts, and it will continue, is how fast is the clock ticking on a new coach, maybe in probably a new general manager, and do not throw out a new president of the franchise, because somebody's head is going to be extricated from the rest of their body if this team fails again.
And here's the biggest thing to me about the Leafs. This is the big point. They blew the easiest chance they will ever have to win a Stanley Cup last year.
Of course they did.
They had a walk into the final four of the playoffs, and they choked it away. It's never, ever going to be that easy again based on the division they're in, and they blew it.
And they know it. And they know it. That's the other hard part. That was the summer hangover here in Toronto, was they know that they had a chance to go and be, you know, up against Tampa in the Stanley Cup final.
At minimum, it should have been the Leafs playing Vegas in that semifinal. You don't know if they're going to win that series, but you know what? What's the thinking on the Leafs right now if they got to the Final Four last year and lost to Vegas? It's entirely different than it is right now. You know, you're thinking, okay, they took that big first step. Now they're ready to go.
Yeah.
That choke, and that's all it is. I keep saying it. Teams don't do that. I don't like saying that. They choked against Montreal. They could not handle the situation, and they blew a massive opportunity they can never get back.
Hey, Scotty, I got to ask you, you spent a year in Dallas. Tom Gilardi and Jim Neal and Jim Lights and all those guys around that club have never been afraid to spend money. They got lots of, but how difficult is it to win in Dallas?
I think the question maybe is how difficult is it to make an impression when you do win? I didn't feel bad for the Stars, but you know, they go to the Stanley Cup final in the bubble, and a really just, you know, what a year, right? I mean, Rick Bonus, and it's a great story. And you know, they've got some good young kids and all those things, but it doesn't really, you know, it's because of COVID and because it was in the bubble, you know, they go to a final and it doesn't really make a dent in the community. And then last year they had the COVID outbreak right away, they got euchred early. I'm really curious to see what happens in Dallas. I think Ryan Suter is going to be a nice add there. Miro Heiskanen is the real deal. I don't know what they're going to do with John Klingberg. He's in a contract year, but that back end, Esa Lindell, that back end is titanic. That might be adding Ryan Suter. Now, can you get him the ice time? Can you make him happy there?
Do you want him to get him the ice time based on how good the other guys are? Do you want him to have the ice time?
Well, but he's still, I thought, you know, Ryan Suter played, you know, whatever his minutes were enormous in Minnesota on a good defensive team there. But again, I think, you know, Tyler Seguin coming back from the hip injury, we know that Jamie Benn's different than Jamie Benn when he won the scoring title. They did have four goaltenders going in camp, so that's a bit of a problem. But I think Dallas is, to me, that to answer your question, if they had another strong season, if they won a round or two, you know, that's, but it's always, it's going to be a nightmare fight, because Dallas, Dallas is the Cowboys, and everything else is in 10 million miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's lots of good hockey. There's lots of good youth hockey there. The Stars are the model franchise for, you know, they, back in the day, they built the arenas, they operate, Jim Lights and that group have done an outstanding job. I think there are 7 or 8. They just opened at least one new one and are building another new one, I believe in the Fort Worth area. Like, they commit the money to grassroots hockey there, which is the only way to sustainability in my mind. But I don't know. Like, it would be fascinating if that trip to the final was in a normal year. What does it mean in that community? How, you know, but man, especially now the Cowboys are rolling and it's like everything else is just like this big.
Yeah.
Tough division for Colorado too.
Yeah.
Winnipeg and St. Louis. It's a tough division.
I want to throw one more team into the bundle here before we let you guys head out. And it's a team that, in many ways, parallels the Toronto Maple Leafs, but they're a couple of years behind in terms of failure. They haven't failed quite as many times as the Maple Leafs. And that's the Edmonton Oilers, who made a couple of moves during the offseason that might be of significance. I don't know what you think of Duncan Keith at this point in his career, but if if you can have a guy who can help and coach and relay experience, if that really means anything in professional sport, and we talk about it all the time. I have no idea whether it matters. Have they got a shot? Could they be kind of that next team to rise through? What do you guys think? Harrington, to you first this time.
Yeah, I mean, they have the best player in the world. That's obviously a good start. They sure do. One of the top other five or six best players in the world also a good start. But boy, are they going to get any saves? Are they going to get any saves to go through four rounds of playoff? I don't know. And Duncan Keith, I think, is not a guy they brought in to play 25 to 28 minutes anymore. They know he's he's not the Duncan Keith of Chicago. But I do think they feel they need some of that guidance from somebody who's been there in their locker room as they go through this situation. But yeah, I mean, you think back to 2015 when everyone was talking about McDavid and Jack Eichel. If I had told you we'd be sitting on a podcast in 2021 and McDavid and Eichel had one combined playoff series victory between them in the next 6 years, you would have said I was nutty. You would have said, you're never getting on my podcast if you think that's going to happen. And that's really what's happened here. It's been amazing. We know all about the failures of the Buffalo Sabres, but the Edmonton Oilers haven't been much better. They've won one playoff series. They've won more awards. They've won more games. But ultimately, the reason they got Connor McDavid out of the lottery was to win Stanley Cups. They haven't come close.
Mike's absolutely correct about the Leafs. They choked that series against Montreal. Maybe that's a good thing for Edmonton, because is there any other way to describe being swept by Winnipeg in the first round than an utter choke job? And I agree, Connor McDavid didn't draw a single penalty, and yes, that sucks and all those things, but how, that's a team that consistently shot itself in the foot. And I will defend Mike Smith all day long, play on my team any single time. There's still, Peter Chiarelli's parting gift, the Mikko Koskinen deal still hanging over that team. Kenny Holland's tried to, he was after Markstrom, he was after Darcy Kuemper. And the defense is, I believe that Duncan Keith can have a positive impact there. But what has happened to that blue line is Adam Larson goes to Seattle. They were counting on him. Ethan Bear is gone in the deal with Carolina.
With Fogle.
Caleb Jones is gone to Chicago. So, I think there are some good young pieces on that blue line, but it's not, to your point, Bob, could they knock off Vegas? Yeah, sure they could. And that division is pretty thin and pretty mediocre. So you shouldn't miss the playoffs, but how good's Vancouver going to be? How good's Calgary going to be? Vegas is a lock. Are you sending four teams? Probably not. I think five come from the Central. So you better be in the top three in the Pacific if you want a playoff spot. And I'm not sure you can lock the Oilers in there. But I believe that one of these years, like the Leafs maybe, they're going to get it right, right? And those guys are going to tear it up. I don't know.
They better hurry.
They better hurry.
Well, I do think. If Scotty, if you're as bullish on Ryan Suter in Dallas, I think that Duncan Keith will have that same effect in Edmonton. I think that his experience, and I do think that it maybe not even on the ice, and I'd like to take credit for this, but we had somebody on the podcast last week that said Duncan Keith will be able to sit in the room and talk to Connor McDavid and have a relationship, and Connor will listen to Duncan Keith. And Duncan Keith has been around the block and understands things, and I think there's a value to that, in addition to knowing that Keith will probably be at his best for the Edmonton Oilers at 18 or 19 minutes a game. Yeah. So from that perspective, I think they're better. I think they have more depth than forward. But it all comes back. Mike Smith and Bob and I've talked about this lots. Mike Smith's 41 years old. He's in great shape. Yeah. He and Scott, you know him well. He might be the most competitive athlete I've ever met in my life. Mike Smith. That's been a really positive thing for the Oilers when he plays. Right. But the question is, at 41, how quickly do you wear down? And that's going to be an issue.
Yeah. And I had a GM tell me this, although I'm going to keep repeating it so that at some point it will sound like I made it up. But he pointed out Zach Hyman, and he said, is Zach Hyman going to be to Connor McDavid what Chris Kunitz was to Sidney Crosby? And that was magic, right? Yeah. It didn't mean that Chris Kunitz went to an Olympic.
Sure.
He was an Olympic Canadian team member based on his connection with Sidney Crosby.
Exactly.
And he asked that question. And I think if the answer is an affirmative, then that, you know, that's a really important addition for Ken Holland in that group.
Yeah. Before we go, just quickly, Mike and Scotty, both Mike, you first, what do you expect out of Seattle?
They're not going to be Vegas, but it's a weak division. They're going to be a playoff team. They're going to be a mid 14 to 16 overall in the league. They're going to score some goals. We'll find out who their version of William Karlsson is, but they've got guys like Eberle and Schultz who've scored some goals, Yanni Gord. They're not going to be an expansion team. They're going to be a wild card level playoff team.
Yeah. I had them at fourth, and I think, okay, if it goes 4-4, I think they could be a playoff team. I think I had them fourth in the Pacific, and I'm with Mike. I think they're going to be really interesting. You know, a guy like Cale Järnkrok maybe is that guy, you know, 30 goals. I'm not talking 50 goals like William Karlsson, but yeah. And I think I'd like the Chris Driedger, Philip Grubauer, even though I appeared to throw him under the bus earlier. I like Grubauer, Driedger, nice mix. That Driedger's a good, he's the real deal, I think. And I think Dave Hakstol will have learned not just from coaching in Philadelphia, but I think his time in Toronto will serve him well. I think they're going to be fun to watch. And yeah, I'm with Mike. Great sort of middle of the pack playoff bubble, playing meaningful games.
You're all incredibly wrong. They won't win 30 games. They are not Vegas. And Vegas was a one-time situation.
Woo, Bob's waving at the Golden Knights flag. Woo, Bob!
Go away. We got to get out of here. It's always fun. It's always a pleasure, and they'll drop the puck soon. And I guess the hockey pucks have been looking forward to it for a long time, and even I'm almost ready to watch a hockey game.
Almost.
Yeah, almost. Thanks, boys. We'll bother you not too far down the road, and we'll digest what you said and then probably spit it back out at you halfway through the season. Thanks, guys. We'll see you.
Thank you, Bob. John.
Back after these messages. Bob McCown, John Shannon, we thank Scott Burnside of the dailyfaceoff.com, or dailyfaceoff.com, more accurately. I put a "the" in there, and there shouldn't be. And Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News for joining us. Disagreements with anything our two pals said?
Only I think people, and it's hard for me to do this, but I agree with you. I think people are rating Colorado much too high. And I think for two reasons. I think the goaltending is going to be an issue. And I am not I've said this before on this show, I am not a Jared Bednar fan. And I was actually surprised that after their loss to Vegas in the playoffs last year, that there wasn't more questioning of Bednar's coaching ability, because he took his best players to task. And I just don't, in 2021, I just don't think you do it.
I agree.
And, I wonder, it's
dangerous at very least.
Well, and these guys, I mean, we've seen Landeskog, we've seen McKinnon, McKinnon particularly, public disagreements with Bednar on the bench. I wonder how long, if things go awry in Denver, how long that relationship continues.
Well, this is just an opinion, but I agree with you 100% with what you've just said, which of course is rare. But I think you have to be a coach with certain amount of stature and acknowledgements and success in order to be able to get away with that, if at all, in this era. And he does not have that.
I don't think so. I mean, I've had nice talks with Jared. He's a quality person.
Personally,
I know, but I just, you know, there's a ton of pressure, in Denver for this team to achieve a lot more than it has this season. And the question is not how the players can manage it. In my opinion, it's how the coach can manage it.
Well, is there somebody we talked to mentioned Minnesota, and they didn't come up in the conversation today. I was going to bring them up. Do you think they're a team on the rise?
Yes, I do. I think they are on the rise. You know, they have one of the most exciting young players in Kaprizov. I also think that Bill Guerin has, as the manager, has done a really good job. You know, Zach Parise and Ryan Suter in the end were too influential in that dressing room. Too influential for what they were as players.
For what they produced.
Well, that too. So the two buyouts, getting rid of Suter and Parise, I think is a real bonus for the Wild.
Again, our thanks to Scott Burnside and Mike Harrington for joining us today. We'll come back tomorrow. We hope you, if you haven't had celebrated your Thanksgiving, you're doing so this evening or before you listen to this show, we hope you have an enjoyable time with your family. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, we'll see you tomorrow. Bye, everyone.